listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to today's episode of Your Ultimate Life, the show that's committed, dedicated to helping you achieve the life you want, purpose, prosperity, joy. That means creating cash, but doing it in a way that is deeply personally satisfying, that makes you know you're making a difference in the world. Today's going to be a little different episode because I want to talk about something I'm noticing. I'm noticing a lot of, and it's scaring me a little bit. And it isn't the lack of civility in public discourse, and it isn't the nonsense that's going on in politics. We live in Canada, but it's the same up here. It's just not as loud as the folks in the U.S. And there's movements in other countries, too. I don't know if you pay attention to European politics, but Joy, my beloved angel, does, and she sees the same kind of trend of lack of discourse and, you know, this polarization and stuff. And this isn't a political show, and I'm not going to make it that. But I'm going to talk about one particular place where this is worrying me, and that is in the delivery of a certain kind of service. Now, you know that I'm a coach. I'm an author. I've written 20 work. I just started my 24th book, so maybe it's 25th. I don't know. But I've written a lot of books. I have a podcast with 1,100 shows. We have this show, and it's all dedicated to one thing, and that is taking ownership of your life and stop blaming external circumstances for that. And that's the theme, and it will be, and that's my work, and nothing's going to change about that. How I language it, how I describe it, how I have it connect with you so that you feel served might evolve, of course, as things change. But here's where I'm concerned. Here's what I'm seeing. About three months ago, I published a book called Coaching and the Rise of AI. And today I have this wacko picture behind me. Looks like a head or a pod or a quantum computer or something with rays going out of it. But here's the thing. In Coaching and the Rise of AI, what I talked about is that the coaching profession is in trouble. I started writing this in May of last year, 25. I finished it in August, September, October. It took me about 6 months to research and write it. And I made some dire predictions. By Christmas this year, which is now what, 10 months away, 9.5, 95% of coaches are not going to be able to make a living. And the reason is because the large language models, what we're just sort of calling AI, is getting so effective at researching, providing answers, even providing encouragement and quasi-human interaction. And if you spend some time with it and ask it questions, even emotional ones, it'll talk to you. And you can train it to sound more and more like you expect it to. And it's programmed to be helpful. And you got to be careful because it will BS you also. And we all know that because we've all heard the stories. But here's what I'm concerned about. In the coaching industry, like, what is coaching? Well, let's think about sports. The goal of a sports coach is to get the team to win the next game, to win the title, to win the championship, whatever it is. We just had the Olympics that were spectacular, the Winter Olympics, and we saw all kinds of amazing performances. One of the ones that I saw that was just blowing me away was the big air competition on snowboards and skis, where they have, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I don't even know how many spins and turns and twists and are supposed to land on their feet. And what blows my mind is when the ski guys do it and land backwards and still go down the hill. I mean, I ski and I skied okay, but we're talking, you know, frontwards and even on, you know, blue and double black and double black, but not, you know, nothing in any universe like you see on there. Okay, so what's happening is coaching in that context is clear. It's easy to see. You have an event, there's measurements, you have to turn this and do that and land a certain way. It's the same for a sports team. We're in the middle of baseball's coming up pretty quick. Spring training is March, you know, that's famous for spring training. Football, the Super Bowl just happened. We got hockey that was a big draw in the Olympics, at least us here in Canada, you know, it's the national sport. And, you know, the U.S. won both the women's and men's this time. But coaching is part of that. The coaching is focused at a particular outcome. Now, coaching has exploded in all kinds of other areas, of relationship coaches and dating coaches and business coaches and life coaches and dork stick coaches. I don't know, whatever, performance coaches still. I have a client who is also a Hollywood A-list vocal coach. And again, that's clear. One of the clients he has right now is preparing for a number of performances that they have at live venues in the Los Angeles area. And so he's working, getting the sets ready and the songs ready and performance and nuance and that kind of stuff. But the outcome is clear. Now, in other kinds of coaching, it's been bastardized over the last many years. And one of the complaints is every idiot in the world can go out there and decide, you know, they have a story to tell and they want to be a life coach. And the problem with all that is, what the frick does that mean? Like, how do you measure success in life? And then the language has devolved into, you know, step into your greatness and access your power and all the rest of that crap. And when you think about if you're struggling in work and you're in a career transition, you know, you have career coaches and transition coaches and all these silly niches, when really there's one fundamental issue. In a sports situation, there's two things. One, you got to master the skill, and two, you have to master the psychology. And the psychology is the most important. I say that again. The psychology is the most important. And they didn't used to do this, but they do now. All the sports teams have team psychologists and counselors and things. And the reason is because it has become obvious that the mindset, the mental attitude, the approach, the confidence of a player is way more contingent on their mindset than on their skill set. You see that in all sports, but one of the ways you see it in hockey is particularly in the goalie position. So if a goalie is not having his best day, having an off day, you know, they'll take him out and put in another goalie. And that's not weird to substitute a player, but it's very, very deeply considered and well thought out, because if you take a goalie out, that essentially says you're not doing this right now. And sometimes they'll put a goalie in for the rest of that game and maybe a game or two, because the goalie needs to get his head chops back up. Okay, none of that's a mystery, and it's really obvious to you as I say it. The concern that I have is with this artificial intelligence, because when people proclaim themselves to be life coaches or relationship coaches or business coaches or whatever, the results were often squishy. We'll help you sell more or do better. And it was difficult to find a situation where they would set specific and concrete goals. Now, in a business or a sales coach, you got to increase sales by 25%. Okay, that's a measurable number that you can hit as a target. And so again, it's like points in the end zone or in the net in hockey. You can measure it and see it. So that was easier. But when you're talking about this attitude thing or this mindset thing, it was language. It's language, it's emotion, it's feeling, it's story, it's what you believe about yourself. And you see that in these Olympic performances. Somebody had an off jump and the gig wasn't get their technique right between the second and third jump. It was get their head right. And one of the things that was spectacular is there was I think it was the big air ski, the little short skis, big air skis. It was a guy that had already done so good on his first two jumps that he had a really high score. Now, he was in the medals, so he was already going to be in the medal round, right? And so he was not in the round, but I mean, already on the podium. And with that under his belt, then he approached the third jump with a completely different mindset. All in, balls to the wall, reckless abandon, I can do this. And he landed the most spectacular jump imaginable and placed gold. But he would not have had the mental courage to do that, except he was already on the podium. And so then it's like, I'm already here. I'm just going to go for it. All in, crazy jump, whatever, and landed it. He could just as easily have crashed and still been on the podium. All right. That is the difference that mindset makes. Okay. And I can think of 100 examples, whether it's selling things, whether it's having a difficult conversation, whether it's how you approach your life every day, whether you have a daily creation process, like I've talked about a lot of times, how you view yourself, because you and me, we cannot perform in life in a manner that is not consistent or inconsistent with how we see ourselves. So if we see ourselves as losers and we can't really do stuff and we're not that good or any of that crap, it's going to show up in how we live and how we perform and how we produce. Anything from, you know, dating to making money to getting a job to succeeding in anything to doing an incredible ski jump. Mindset is everything. It's not everything. It's 80%. 80% mindset and 20% strategy and execution. That's statistically valid and demonstrated over and over again. I want you to think about that. 80% mindset, 20% strategy and execution. Now, you can't get there without strategy and execution, but the mindset's way bigger. All right, so that is the background for the concern that I have. The concern that I have is AI is providing language that is really good. And so anybody that gets good with AI can find out quickly powerful phrases, powerful words, powerful questions to help, quote, help people overcome these mindset barriers, roadblocks, getting in your own way, however that's described in the coaching world. But that's not enough. Language has become cheap. Okay, I want you to think about that. Because here's the crux. If you're going to take someone to a new place in their heart, in their mind, in their confidence, in the attitude, you can't do it by talking about it. You can talk about confidence all you want, but if you personally, as the person trying to help, whether you're an official coach or not, if you don't own that space, if you don't embody that, and that's a fancy word for saying it leaks out of you because that's who you are, you're dead. And the thing that's worrying me is because language has now become cheap because AI is available to everybody and it's so flipping good. And I saw that in writing the book and doing the analysis of coaching methodologies. And this is one of the ways AI is going to put those 95% out of business. Because what's going to happen is people are going to realize very quickly that they can get those same words out of AI in their own conversations. I was talking to somebody the other day that said they were reduced to tears in their conversation with AI. Not because AI was blowing smoke, but because it was unemotionally reflecting back the attitudes and patterns that it was seeing from that person during that interaction. And so what we have to understand, whether you are a coach or a consumer of those services. Now, you might be neither. You might not be a coach and you might not have one in any area of your life. And so you're like, what the frick? This doesn't apply to me. And that's fair, except how bad do you want to get to the top of any particular area? Because if you, and there's no requirement, but if you want to get to the top 5%, the top 10% of your performance in whatever it is, whether it's sales or whether it's climbing mountains, you have to have a coach, period. Everybody should have that. You can decide you don't want it, and you can decide you're going to live your life just kind of with whatever comes, and you're free to do that, and I'm not telling you what to do. But I'm telling you, if you want to get to the podium, no Olympic medalist would even consider doing that without a coach. No sports team would consider doing it without a coach. No performer on stage would consider doing it without a coach. And the reason is because the truth of real coaching is really powerful. And this AI is contaminating it badly, badly. And it's exactly what I predicted in the book. I did not say exactly how that would happen. I suggested several possibilities, and one that is materializing that is not exactly described in the book is this. People are getting good with words, and so they sound really good, but they are not living proof of what they teach. Oh, man. And so the words don't land with power. Now, we have a saying, the pen is mightier than the sword. And obviously the purpose of that is language can motivate people to do things, good or bad, but can motivate people better than coercion or force. Because language has the ability to draw up in us determination, resilience, focus, power. It can do that. Okay, and here, and we can quote neuroscience, you know, neuroplasticity and how we create new neural pathways and habits and the post cortex and the prefrontal and the this piece of the brain and the amygdala and all. And so we can talk a big game, and AI has made it possible more and more to talk a big game, and the big game is hollow. The big game is empty unless you, if you're one of the providers, can back it up with who you're being, who you are being. Because the thing that makes truth land hard with real impact is the energy of the giver. I'll give you an example that you already know. You're in a car dealership. Now, there's some really good car salesmen that are nice and ethical and listen to you and pay attention and really try to get you what you want. And then there's the proverbial used car salesman, right? And the only thing they're trying to do is tell you how good this car is, no matter what it is. You know, they're just speaking about how good it is. And you can feel it's as squirmy as hell. You feel uncomfortable. You're like, get away from me. I don't want to talk to you. And you say that almost before they open their mouth. And the reason isn't because there's anything wrong with them, but the energy they're bringing is creepy. It is needy. It is pushy. It is anything but in service oriented. On the other hand, somebody that has a completely different energy of service and really curious about what you might need or not, whatever, that's not repulsive, but that other energy is repulsive. And what's happening right now, and I'm seeing it happen, is that there are people using powerful language because they now have access to more powerful language than they ever had, and they are not the embodiment, that they don't own the truths that they're speaking. And that is a terrifying place because the words sound good, and it's easy to fool people because the words sound good. And what we have to do as consumers is we have to feel into the truth. Like, we all have a BS meter, and we know when something is overblown. And now more than ever, because the words are so good, people are downplaying their BS meter. And all that means is you're going to, number one, waste money, two, waste time, and three, you're not going to get the results, and four, then you're going to think, oh, this coaching crap's no good, doesn't work. And that's, none of those things are true. Good coaching is worth every cent you spend. You can have all the results you want. The whole show, Ultimate Life, and my podcast are based on a simple truth, and that is you and me, we create our lives one day, one hour, one moment at a time. That never means that we control circumstances, but in every instance, we control what we make from the raw materials of life. The raw materials are what happens. Those are just the raw materials, like paint on a paint board, if you're an artist. It's just paint on the paint board. And you decide, and I decide, the colors and how it mixes and what we're trying to create from it. And believe me, in from the exact same circumstances, two people can create something completely different. So what I'm seeing that is worrying me is the lack of coherence, the lack of integrity between language and being. And I'm calling that out right now because it worries me, both for people receiving the benefits of coaching and for coaches that think they're cool because they're using bigger and better language and words and phrases. Okay. So if you're just seeing big language and quantum references and physics and neuroplasticity and the vocabulary of brain science and everything else, biological patterns and energetic alignment and all that kind of stuff, that's fine. Those are good words and it sounds powerful. But here's what I'm noticing. I'm hearing fluency with the language of change, but I am not feeling embodiment. Okay? AI is giving every single person the language now. Really. And that's just fine if you and I as the consumer are feeling for the energetic alignment. In other words, really simply, does the person that's teaching you how to get out of your way and overcome barriers and blocks and obstacles in your mind, have they overcome theirs? Are they sitting behind those same barriers and blocks? And I'll give you a perfect example. I work with most of my clients are not coaches. They're business owners and so forth, but I have a few. And here's what I hear over and over and over again. I sure can see how to help my clients, what's in their way. But when it comes to me, I can't figure out my messaging, my marketing, my message market match, the right medium, overcoming my, oh, I don't want to be seen, or I don't, all of the things that are exactly the problems they're, quote, helping clients with are big barriers and bricks right in front of their face. And what that means isn't that a coach has got to be perfect, because nobody is. But if you're not busy in a powerful container working on those things, you've got nothing to offer. You have nothing to offer, because it is in the act of growth that you and I learn the language and the feeling and the process of growth. Growth, real growth, the kind that stretches and is difficult. Now, and the other thing is, people are talking about, oh, it's easy. You just instantly change your mindset and it's just a pop. Ask any sports team how instant any of that stuff is. Saving a half a second here or a half a step there or adding another turn to those insane jumps that you see. None of that happens in an instant. None of it. And I realize that skill development and mindset development isn't as linear. It can be exponential. And I understand that. And I've experienced some of that. And I've facilitated some of that with clients. But there's a disease that I feel, and that is, okay, you can get this with the easy button. There's a quick and easy way to slam this button. And suddenly your mindset is right, and you can have and create whatever, at least the 80% of it, while you work on your skills. That's not true. Personal development, if you choose to engage in that, is a journey. It's a mountain without a top. And if you've got a guide, that guide damn well better know the path and be ahead of you or me on that path. And the worry that I have is the facility of language that's being bestowed on everybody with AI creates incongruence. Everybody can reference physics and probability principles and all of the rest. And those things are all true. But if you're not experiencing that yourself, then your references are hollow. So we need to pay attention to that sort of thing. Now, this piece I'm calling the AI amplifier problem. AI, these large language models, whichever one you use, I use it a lot. I happen to use ChatGPT, but it can be Grok, it can be Claude, or whatever. They are built to be of service and they're amazing, but it amplifies our immediate access to language, to powerful language, to gaps in our reasoning, to all of those things that we have. So you can put your coaching tools and frameworks in there and it'll help you in an enormous way. And when it does, it feels so good because you're finding things and having ahas that let you feel more equipped and more powerful. And the engine that makes it land is your own becoming. If you are not, or I am not, I'm not saying it just to you, but if we as purveyors of that help are not the embodiment, meaning it's in us, it's part of our DNA, then we won't be able to do it. I had a couple of conversations. We certainly won't be effective. And the bubble of greater proficiency is going to pop soon, like not in years, in months, like this year. Now, I had a couple of conversations. In fact, I've had many that exhibit this in a particular way, and I'll share them with you. I had a conversation with someone who, bless their heart, and I love them, they are a coach, and they coach a certain way, and they coach a certain group of people, and I believe that they're good at what they do. But what I noticed in the conversation is we were having a conversation about good coaching, and as they were describing their method, their idea, their goal, their vision, their power, it was disconnected. It was the recital of empty words. And I knew that, and I don't, you know, they weren't intending to do that, but I wasn't feeling any power. I wasn't feeling any connectedness. And it wasn't because I was the wrong audience. It's because they did not believe in their own heart deeply that they owned this truth and this topic. And they were talking about it. I'll give you another example. I run a recording studio, now only for myself, but I opened my first one in the early 80s. So 40 years, I've been doing recording for myself and other people and records and stuff on and off. And when I first started, I learned a lot about mixing and frequency ranges and compression and all the tools that go into making a good mix. And I was just like I'm describing. I could talk about it. And it took some years of work before I embodied, meaning my being was that of a proficient engineer and producer, before I became one with the music and I could hear the different things and see how things fit in. And, you know, I was that person. Aha, I have a cat on my desk. I was that person, and it took some years. That was the birth of my embodiment in the audio engineering space. And now I still do lots of things. I've got 90-something songs on Spotify, and I've got three more that I'm working on right now to be done in the next month, I hope. And that'll finish a third album that I've been doing. But now it's completely different because the way I feel when I do it is more connected, more embodied, more part of that process. And that's one example. But when you're in, and it applies to every single thing. That's why the phrase, well, the way you do one thing is the way you do everything, is so, it's both revealing, scary, and powerful because it's true. It's true. One of the things that it shows up, one way that it shows up is you can't love anybody else more than you love yourself. People argue with that all the time, but it's true. You can't. I can't love you more than I love me. And I love you. And I love me a hell of a lot. But that's been a long time coming. I hated myself for so long. And a person who's not confident in themselves, especially in the principles of changing mindset, is not going to be a good guide, no matter how good and how sexy and how expansive the language is. So let's talk about the embodiment test. The embodiment test. Here's how you can tell if you live as an embodied person or me. Do I live what I teach? Getting barriers out of the way and blocks. That's all ephemeral language. It doesn't mean anything. It's vacuous garbage. Unless you have a regular, powerful practice. Do you live what you teach? It's not complicated, yes or no. When I look at what I teach, morning rituals and PTACs, personal truth documents, and being completely open and transparent, you know, coming forward with love first, listening deeply without judgment, I could not have said yes when I first started coaching and for the first years. And now I absolutely say yes unequivocally. And that's been a longstanding growth process. And what it feels like to me, the thing that's worrying me, is the skill of this language model. These language models are giving people the language and ability to describe something they have not yet internalized. They do not yet get it. Think about it this way. A craftsman who is carving. My son is a master craftsman. He loves to make bespoke furniture with exotic wood. And he loves doing that. And he doesn't have a ton of clients, but he has some. And he does other carpentry work too. But watching his hands, after now years, moving and creating amazing stuff is magic. And it's because those skills are in his hands. And so the embodiment test is, are the things you teach in your spirit, in your heart, are they simply how you are? Does my nervous system reflect my philosophy? So, for example, if I'm working with a client who's having trouble letting go of a past grievance, meaning, you know, with forgiveness and letting some past event no longer have power in the present, If I'm holding on to those things, I'm going to suck at that coaching. If I haven't learned to dismiss all old grievances and to live in complete forgiveness, or if I'm not furiously working on that thing in a powerful container, I'm not going to be able to help someone else do that because I'm talking about a thing instead of from lived experience. And that might be painful for you to hear, unless that's something you're doing, but that's a key piece. And again, the worry for me, and I think it should be scaring the crap out of all coaches, is language is easy now to say. You can say all the right things because these tools have given you that ability, but it isn't going to camouflage our lack of embodiment. Okay, here's another way to tell if you are living, if you're embodied in what you teach. When pressure hits, when financial things hit, when there's trouble, when clients quit, when you have trouble at home, when disaster strikes or pressure, do you default to sovereignty or drama? Sovereignty or drama, and I'll define those. Drama, of course, is the blaming and the anger and the frustration, or to sovereignty, which is, okay, this happened. It's not what I wanted. What can I create? What powerful thing can I create from this mess? Maybe it's not even a mess. Maybe it's an opportunity for me to grow. And again, that becomes camouflaged in the cool language that's floating around. Another question to answer, if I'm challenged hard, do I simply defend myself or do I regulate? And by regulate, I mean manage the emotion. And then dig into it with genuine curiosity. And when I interact with someone, is it out of love or defense? How do I listen? Am I listening really to learn or to give advice? Am I listening to respond with one of these cool piles of language that I have? Or am I listening to understand and then provide mirroring, I don't mean of language, but of behavior patterns? Okay, if my life doesn't reflect my teaching, then my teaching is just a rehearsal. I'm just talking about stuff. And that is going to disappear. First, it's going to commoditize pricing specifically, and pricing is going to go down because it's commoditized. And next, it's going to put coaches that live like that out of business because people are going to realize for $50 or $90 a month, they can have the same powerful language and advice. And in all the interviews I've done on my podcast, the Thursday episodes for the last 6 months, it's been with a couple of coaches each on each of those where we talk about what AI is doing and how they're using it and so forth. And there are some very thoughtful episodes, and there are some coaches that I haven't allowed to be on the episode that have a glib response. Oh, you know, everything's the human touch, and I got that handled. they're out of business already. They just don't know it yet. All right, so I want you to think one more time, if my life does not reflect my teaching, then all I'm doing is rehearsing language that somebody else wrote or said. And that should scare you if you are in that business. Or if you are looking for that kind of help. The key question, finding a good coach, is, are they the living embodiment of what they teach? And you can feel that energetically in a heartbeat. Okay, so here's the problem. I said in the book, 95% of coaches won't survive this change. And here's the because. They won't survive because AI does performance coaching better. It can analyze your sales calls. It can tell you where you missed buying signals. It can tell you where you hesitated and got off track. It can tell you where you let your personal language, your personal fears and worries get in the way. It can do all that faster and better than you can as a coach. It can easily and powerfully simulate reflective questioning. One of the things that, you know, people said about in defense of coaching was, you know, they can't really do the right kind of listening and coaching. And that's true, but only at the highest level. What I noticed in writing the book, Coaching and the Rise of AI, was that in the 6 months it took me to research and write it from May to October, the skill of the LLM that I was using, ChatGPT, doubled and then doubled again. And by skill, I mean its ability to understand complex framing and give good advice, its ability to listen well, its ability to sort out excuses and call me out when I was, you know, making excuses or getting lost in story. All of the things that, you know, coaches that are real life pride themselves in, we're going to have to level up. And my worry is, because we get the good language freely, easily, and at a, you know, on demand 24/7, it's going to create a false sense of security, because the language isn't the key. The energy and truth of our being is the key. AI can generate frameworks. Well, I know a guy who, and this is several years ago now, and I'm not even sure he's still in this business, but his specialty was listening to someone's story, their life and what they wanted to accomplish, and then helping them build a framework that they could create products and services from and sell. AI can do that in 15 minutes and better. So all of that kind of service offering is going to disappear. Obviously, AI tracks metrics and numbers and all of that flawlessly. I use it. I had a situation where I was testing. I'm building a bot coached by Kellen. So I'm building an AI bot that embodies or that represents, I won't say embodies because AI is not alive, but it's full of millions, literally 5 million plus words from all my books, podcast episodes, coaching calls, a whole bunch of things to understand how I work. And I'm going to make it available to clients in between calls. Okay. But even with that, there's going to be a difference between an embodied person who lives what they teach, and it shows by how they speak and act and love and listen, and a rehearsal or a reflection given by the AI. So I love it, AI, and I think we all should lean into it. But living into the false sense of security that it suddenly made us cool because we have all this language is the quickest way to go out of business that I know. Here's some things AI cannot do. AI cannot sit with a person and co-regulate. And what I mean by that is I have literally had situations where someone in a coaching session, and most of mine are on Zoom now, but when they were in person, even on Zoom, just breathe with me. Breathe to get to stability, silence, and connection, to get to a powerful place of understanding. AI is not going to be able to do that, at least not in the foreseeable future. AI cannot embody authority. So, for example, there was a guy that I coached, this is some years ago now, who had a very, very serious drug problem, heroin problem. Okay. And I spoke with him about that, and he had, you know, indicated a very, very strong desire, and he's willing to do whatever it is to kick it, and et cetera, et cetera. And so I listened, and we talked about it. And because I had addiction problems for years, and I had walked that road powerfully, deeply, and was now completely free for years, I knew many things to say, do, and how to be that someone that hadn't walked that road would not know, would simply not know. And in fact, some of the questions I asked this fellow looked at me and thought, why are you asking that? And I looked right at him and I said, I'm an addict. And I know this and I know that. And I was able to do that in a way that completely shook it up. And it was effective. And the good news is clean, clear, got the help he needed, went back to college, all kinds of things, powerful, happy ending. But it was because of embodiment, not because I knew the words to say. So that's just an example. The hard part is this. Most coaches were not embodying or living the truths they taught anyway. They're part of that. Well, I can help other people, but I can't see things for myself. And coupled with, they were not in a powerful coaching container or a container of growth themselves. Yeah, I took some coaching classes. I got a certification. I'm good. If you're not in a powerful growth container yourself, you're going to suck. End of story. You can get mad at me for saying it, but that's the truth. You got to be actively engaged to stay connected to the energy, the power, the insight, the wisdom, the spiritual downloads, whatever you want to call it, of good coaching. We've got to do that. And I include we. All this is we. I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to us. And I saw this, and I have this worried. The other thing that I saw in the last couple of weeks in a conversation, more than one actually, was exactly what I'm talking about. I saw someone who is a coach using all kinds of impressive and powerful language that was just impressing the heck out of some of the listeners. And I saw that, but I knew from my interactions with that person that while they had overcome obstacles themselves and they were not in any way trying to be inauthentic, shall we say, that they did not own deeply the truth that they were talking about. And what I saw was exactly what I'm describing, impressing people with the language without living it fully themselves. So what can we do? What can we do? Well, here's what I'm doing. Number one, I am engaged fully in development, hardcore all the time, to stay in the realm of all those things that AI cannot do. People that say, well, AI can't do the personal human stuff. That's right. And the question I have for each person that says that is, how good are you at that right now, really? How much do you live in that truth of love and service, where you're never worried about you or outcomes or how you look or what's going on in here, but everything is focused on the growth of the prospect, client, or stranger in front of you? Do you lead with love and service, or do you just talk about it? So here's what Kellen's doing. I spend 2 hours every single day preparing myself with my daily creation process, not because I have to, not because I want to talk about doing that, but because that's what I require of myself to be the embodied example of what I teach. If you want to know about that, I have a book about that called Living with Purpose and Power, about what I do and how to do it. And the analogy is, can you imagine any of those Olympians warming up after their events? Of course not. So we have to warm up every day, so that we can be our best selves, connected and tuned into that growth element. Okay? That's what I do. I prepare myself 2 hours every day. I am in a coaching container that's powerful and meaningful. Why? Because I want to. I want people to say, I want to be the best version of myself. Then I ask, okay, what are the things that I would see in your life to show me that? because just having stuff happen and then saying, oh, I got to do better. You know, that's the 1%. You know, that's here. And AI is going to replace all of that. What's left for us is the top 3, 4, 5%, where the only things we're focused on is the power of connection that AI cannot touch, where we're fully embodied in what we teach, and we spend effort and energy getting there and staying there. If I can't see it in you, or you can't see it in me, clients are not going to feel it. It has to be obvious, literally, when we walk in a room before we even speak. That is the wound right now in the profession. The wound is we are not living embodiment, living, walking billboards for the truth of what we teach. So here's what I'm doing and what I'm suggesting. I'm just writing another book as a teaching of this. It's called The Sovereign Architect. And here's the shift. There's a swamp and there's a meadow. The swamp is a place of learned helplessness, addiction to mediocrity, and victim mindset. In coaching language, it is the place of talking about things, having good frameworks and tools, and hoping that we can say good things, ask questions, and be powerful enough to get clients and make money. That's the swamp. The meadow is a beautiful place, and I use a swamp and a meadow as a metaphor. Fierce life ownership, radical excellence, and a passion to serve. My business plan is find people to love, opportunities. I say it this way. I never look for clients. I look for people to love, opportunities to serve, and problems to solve. And clients come in abundance, and that is true. And that's how I live, that's how I love, and that's how I go through every day. And it is true. I have not had that before. It came as a result of doing the things that I've talked about. We cannot outsource our identity. We have to be transparent and clear so that those who are looking for guidance can feel the attraction of the truth of who we are and how we live. We can't borrow authority. That's a fatal mistake that AI is and will be exposing more than anything. Live in sovereignty means that you embody confidence. You learn from setbacks. You embrace trials as sacred teachers. All that crap happens in everybody's world and in everybody's life. Embodiment is not what we say. It's what remains when we get squished. Right? People say you don't rise to the level of your greatness. You sink to the level of your training. The way we would say that is coaches default to their real level of embodiment. So here's the wake-up call, my friends. I'm not angry about anything, but I'm very urgent. The time is now for us to step up, to recognize the value of the tools and to use them with integrity. AI is not a threat. Exposure is the threat, because the ubiquitous nature and powerful development of these tools is welcome. And it will be a powerful aid to us doing good if we simultaneously are working diligently and thoroughly on our own embodiment, because this otherwise will expose our inconsistency or our fragility or how much we're performing. We can't perform anymore. We have to be what we teach. Borrowed insight is no longer valuable. So we can either become embodied or obsolete. That's the choice, and it's that stark. Once in a while, some big change comes to an industry that resets the whole thing. This is here. This is now. So as we close today, I want you to think about this. It's our turn to step up, to raise the bar, to go up. You can't take 3 months or 4 months or 6 months to figure this out. Our opportunity is to commit now. You can stay in the coaching business and get on our own. We can stay in the coaching business and get on our own development. I'm in. I'm committed. I've been doing that now for several years, way before I knew anything about AI coming. Of course, we all heard about it. I can promise you that it's worth the effort. And if you love being in this business, then any effort that you need to stay there will do two things. You'll be in the top few percent and you'll be well paid and make a big difference. And two, you will love the person that you become as we together spend the effort to grow, to lift, and to be the truth, to be the truth that we teach. All of those things together will help you and me as we move forward to create the ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.